When everyone was set to go, I loaded Marley into the van and handed his nylon leash to the little boy, who looked terrified. "He's friendly. He'll just want to lick you." Take one. The van pulls to the curb. The instant the daughter slides open the side door, a yellow streak shoots out like a giant furball being fired from a cannon and blurs past the cameras, trailing a red leash. Cut! I chase Marley down in the parking lot and hauled him back. "Okay, folks, we're going to try that again," Gossie said. Then to the boy he coached gently. "The dog's pretty wild. Try to hold on tighter this time." Take two. The van pulls to the curb. The door slides open. The daughter is just beginning to exit when Marley huffs into view and leaps out past her, this time dragging the white-knuckled boy behind him. Cut! Take three. The van pulls up. The door slides open. The daughter exits. The boy exits, holding the leash. As he steps away from the van, the leash pulls taut, stretching back inside. But no dog follows. The boy begins to tug, heave, and pull. He leans into it and gives it everything he has. Not a budge. Long, painfully empty seconds pass. The boy grimaces and looks back at the camera. Cut! I peered into the van to find Marley bent over, licking himself where no male was ever meant to lick. He looked up at me as if to say, "Can't you see I'm busy?" Take four. I load Marley into the back of the van with the boy and shut the door. Before Gossie calls action, he breaks for a few minutes to confer with his assistants. Finally, the scene rolls. The van pulls to the curb. The door slides open. The daughter steps out. The boy steps out, but with a bewildered look on his face. He peers directly into the camera and holds up his hand. Dangling from it is half the leash, its end jagged and wet with saliva. Cut, cut, cut! The boy explained that as he waited in the van, Marley began gnawing on the leash and wouldn't stop. The crew and cast were staring at the severed leash in disbelief, a mix of awe and horror on their faces as though they had just witnessed some great and mysterious force of nature. I, on the other hand, was not surprised in the least. Marley had sent more leashes and ropes to their graves than I could count. He even managed to chew his way through a rubber-coated steel cable that was advertised as used in the airline industry. "Okay, everybody, let's take a break," Gossie called out. Turning to me, he asked, in an amazingly calm voice, "How quickly can you find a new leash?" He didn't have to tell me how much each lost minute cost him as his union-scale actors and crew sat idle. "There's a pet store a half mile from here. I can be back in 15 minutes. This time, get something he can't chew through." I returned with a heavy chain leash that looked like something a lion trainer might use, and the filming continued, take after failed take. Each scene was worse than the one before. At one point, Danielle, the teenage actress, let out a desperate shriek mid-scene and screamed with true horror in her voice, "Oh my God! His thing is out! Cut!" In another scene, Marley was panting so loudly at Danielle's feet as she spoke on the telephone to her love interest that the sound engineer flipped off his headphones in disgust and complained loudly, "I can't hear a word she's saying. All I hear is heavy breathing. It sounds like a porn flick. Cut!" So went day one of shooting. Marley was a disaster. Unmitigated and without redemption. Part of me was defensive. Well, what did they expect for free, Benji? And part was mortified. I self-consciously stole glances at the cast and crew and could see it plainly on their faces. Where did this animal come from, and how can we send him back? At the end of the day, one of the assistants, clipboard in hand, told us the shooting lineup was still undecided for the next morning. "Don't bother coming in tomorrow," he said, and to ensure there was no confusion, he repeated, "So unless you hear from us, don't show up. Got it?" Yeah, I got it. Marley's fledgling acting career was over. Not that I could blame them, with the possible exception of that scene in The Ten Commandments, where Charlton Heston parts the Red Sea, Marley had presented the biggest logistical nightmare in the history of cinema. He had caused who knows how many thousands of dollars in needless delays and wasted film. He had slimed countless costumes, raided the snack table, and nearly toppled a $30,000 camera. They were cutting their losses, writing us out. The next morning, I was still fretting over our dashed dreams of stardom when the phone rang. It was the assistant telling us to get Marley to the hotel as soon as possible. "You mean you want him back?" "Right away," he said. "Bob wants him in the next scene." I arrived 30 minutes later, not quite believing they had invited us back. Gossie was ebullient. He had watched the raw footage from the day before and couldn't have been happier. The dog was hysterical! Pure madcap genius! Shooting continued for several more days, and Marley was lapping up stardom. The crew, especially the women, fawned over him. The weather was brutally hot, and one assistant was assigned the exclusive duty of following Marley around with a bowl and a bottle of spring water, pouring him drinks at will. Everyone, it seemed, was feeding him snacks off the buffet table. I left him with the crew for a couple of hours while I checked in at work, and when I returned, I found him sprawled out like King Tut, paws in the air, accepting a leisurely belly rub from the strikingly gorgeous makeup artist. "He's such a lover," she cooed. Stardom was starting to go to my head, too. I began introducing myself as Marley the dog's handler, and dropping lines such as, "For his next movie, we're hoping for a barking part." We remained on the set for 4 straight days, and by the time we were told Marley's scenes were all completed and his services no longer needed, Jenny and I both felt we were part of the shooting gallery family. Granted, the only unpaid members of the family, but members nonetheless. "We love you guys," Jenny blurted out to all within earshot as we herded Marley into the minivan. "Can't wait to see the final cut." But wait, we did. One of the producers told us to give them 8 months and then call and they'd mail us an advance copy. After 8 months, when I called, however, a front desk person put me on hold and returned several minutes later to say, "Why don't you try in another couple months?" I waited and tried, but each time was put off. Eventually, I stopped calling, resigned that we would never see the last home run, convinced that no one ever would, that the project had been abandoned on the editing room floor on account of the overwhelming challenges of trying to edit that damn dog out of every scene. I was in Blockbuster a full 2 years later when on a whim I asked the clerk if he knew anything about a movie called The Last Home Run. Not only did he know about it, he had it in stock. In fact, as luck would have it, not a single copy was checked out. Only later would I learn that, unable to attract a national distributor, the shooting gallery had no choice but to release Marley's movie debut straight to video. I didn't care. I raced home with a copy and yelled to Jenny and the kids to gather around the VCR. All told, Marley was on screen for less than 2 minutes, but I had to say they were two of the livelier minutes in the film. We laughed, we cried, we cheered. Marley, never one to get hung up on pretenses, seemed unimpressed. By the time the end credits rolled, he was sound asleep. We waited with breath held as the names of all the actors of the two-legged variety had scrolled by. For a minute, I thought our dog was not going to merit a credit, but then there it was, listed in big letters across the screen for all to see. Marley the dog, as himself.